Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Public Safety Talk Radio. For those of you that have joined us a couple of weeks ago, we had Associate Director Ray Labar that was co-hosting the show. Today, we have the special guest of the Chief of the Campus Police Department, Bob Smith, that's going to be sitting in with me today. How you doing today, Chief?
Pretty good, Ray. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here on Hampshire campus, one of the prettiest campuses in Pioneer Valley.
And the campus is glad to have you, Chief. They're glad to have you. I know a lot of the campus community want to know a little bit about you, pretty much when you can. Yeah, I know you met a lot of people when you came around, and I know there's some students here that like to get to know you as well. What can you say about yourself a little bit?
Well, that's why I was so happy that you had invited me to this edition of the Public Safety Talk Radio. I did get to meet a number of people. The final selection process for the chief's job involved 25 interviews over 2.5 days on 3 different campuses, which was taxing to say the least. But the good thing about it was I did get to know the faculty and staff, but most importantly, the students. And I really felt very comfortable with the students here on Hampshire. The group that interviewed me were really, forthright in their questions, and they asked some hard questions, which I'm happy they did. That means they're interested in it. They just weren't there because they had to be there.
Right.
But they also listened. I find that the Hampshire students, they'll get up in your face when they feel that they have a point to make, but they talk to you, and they will listen to what you have to say in response to what they're talking about. And I don't know whether they like hearing it, but they're also some of the nicest, politest students I've run into in the last 30 years of being around various campuses.
Oh, that's very nice. I'm sure they like to hear that, Chief.
Well, they are. I wouldn't say if I didn't feel it, I'd probably give you a little background on where I came from. I grew up down in Eastern Mass outside of Boston in what used to be a blue-collar town, mostly factory workers and such. That was until gentrification came in, and now I couldn't afford to live there if I worked 2 jobs. Somerville, that's where I grew up. But as far as my background in policing, 30 years ago, I was hired at Bentley University Campus Police. I just graduated from college. I went to Suffolk University and received a bachelor's degree in sociology, which, if any of you are wondering, those degrees really do help you in the real world.
Nice.
The sociology degree really has helped me throughout my career. It's really instilled in me appreciation for understanding other people's points of view and understanding that if you're a really good police officer, you have to adapt to the environment you're in and not expect that environment will adapt to you. I digress. I was hired by Bentley University Campus Police back in 1981 when I graduated. I worked there for 3 years. At the time, campus police had been around for a while, but it was still kind of in its infancy. You had arrest powers, but there really wasn't a whole lot of requirements as far as academy training and regular annual in-service training is what police call it. And weren't a lot of written procedures. And not that I'm a big proponent of overdoing the written procedures, but I find that in policing, that those are good things. You have to have guidelines, and you have to really let officers in the communities that you're in know what those guidelines are so that there's a common understanding. When I was at Bentley, though, I really enjoyed it, and I didn't know whether I would. One of my older brothers, I have 5 brothers, one of my older brothers has worked at MIT campus police for 39 and a half years, and at the time he told me, go over, try it out, and I did enjoy it. I was there for 3 years. Faculty, staff, students, everybody was nice. Every now and then you have somebody who had too much to drink, and there'd be some little dust-ups there, or you'd have people coming on campus trying to break into cars or rooms to steal stuff. And I always felt good when we were able to grab somebody like that and protect that community. And so I really enjoyed it, but then I was I had taken civil service exams, and I was called by the Metropolitan Police. That was a 700-person agency that worked in the 40-something communities in Boston and in the 40 surrounding communities, and they had jurisdiction in Central Mass and parts of Western Mass. And it was a good job. I really enjoyed working there from 83 to 92. I learned a lot. I worked down on Revere Beach back when it was a little bit wilder than it is now. It's gotten gentrified with all the condominiums that were built. But it was really a good place to work. Worked in some areas that, you know, they don't have a lot of money, but good people there. And, you know, you got along. And when you did something for somebody in Chelsea or Lynn or Revere, you know, they would say thank you, and that was always a good feeling. Right. That's they don't have to say it, but it's always nice when somebody thanks you.
Right, right.
In 1992, there was what was termed the consolidation of four police agencies that all kind of came under the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It was the old Division of State Police, the Metropolitan Police, the old Registry Police, which all of the listeners here are probably too young to remember, and the Capitol Police. That was a 60-officer force that patrolled the State House and some of the other state office buildings in downtown Boston and took care of security concerns there. So that happened in 92, and all four of those departments had their own unique cultures, getting back to my sociology roots. They had their own unique cultures, but they all had brought something to the table, something that they could contribute, because they all operated in kind of different policing environments. When it happened in 92, the consolidation, July 1st, 92, I would say we really didn't complete the consolidation until almost 1996. And I say that, everybody was in the same uniform by August of 92, but the way it was done, because it was police, I think a lot of people that had thought it was a good idea, and it was a good idea, thought, well, they're all police. We'll just have them take off their old uniforms, put on the new uniform, and appoint somebody to be in charge of them, and that's it. They're all good to go. They didn't, and this is something I've tried to correct since I've been here for the last 3 months, nobody came out and talked to the individuals, the officers that were involved on those four agencies, and there were over 2,300 of us when you combined all four agencies.
Wow.
Yeah, it was big. And I don't expect the person that was appointed colonel at the time to come out and speak to every individual officer, or now after 92, trooper.
Right.
But I think it would have benefited the department and the command staff of the department if they had come out and done some focus groups and sort of asked, well, why do you do this and why do you do that? Because, like I said, all four agencies had their own unique cultures and mm-hmm. had pride in what they had done, and they had something to contribute to this larger organization.
Right.
But so in 1992, I was a sergeant stationed down in Revere Beach, and this consolidation happened, and I think for those next 3 years, the only thing members of the four former agencies really shared was sort of a sense of loss. They felt like they'd lost their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that was especially true of the old Division of State Police. They took great pride for good cause in their reputation and their organization. And they felt like they'd lost, even though we all adopted their uniforms and their structure, that they'd lost their identity in that consolidation. So it wasn't
right.
any one, it was all four.
Right.
If I'm going on too long, just cut me off, Earl.
No, you're
don't,
doing
don't worry about me being your chief and being able to transfer you. That won't come into play.
No, you're doing fine, Chief. You're doing fine.
But so in 1995, 96, as things will happen, people had started talking on their own and meeting each other at different training events, and the department really coalesced and really made major strides going forward from there. I was a sergeant in 92, and when I retired on January 1st of 2010, I retired as a lieutenant colonel. I was the third ranking member of the department, so I say that to show that we eventually did get our act together, because I came from an agency that was not state police, and for me to progress to that point, it kind of demonstrates that the state police had, they always had been, but they had finally gotten back to a meritocracy where it wasn't where you came from or where your training occurred, it was what you contributed to the agency.
And that's great.
Yeah, and I learned a lot from that. In, like I said, in January of 2010, I retired. I have three kids. Two of them are in college. Well, one's in college and one's doing his gap year before he goes to college. But I also have my 12-year-old.
Okay.
And I retired. I'd achieved everything I wanted to achieve on the state police. I left as the division commander for field operations, which is the 1,800 uniformed troopers that you see riding in mock cruises and the helicopters, the boats, the horses, all that. And I really enjoyed it, but I also wanted to spend more time with my 12-year-old because it almost felt like we were strangers, because I'd spent 80, 85 hours a week at work driving all over the state.
So you want to have that family time.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think that's one of the things about police work, and it's gotten better, is, our divorce rate and other issues used to be really high, but you really got to monitor that, because policing is one of those last, what I was taught at Suffolk, total institutions, where if you let it, it will consume your life.
Yeah.
If you get to the point where all your friends are police officers and every event you go to is a police-sponsored event,
that's
not really good, because you're not staying connected to the community and to how other people are experiencing things and perceiving how events roll out. So,
and that's very important, too,
you have to stay connected to the community, or in the end, you're doing it's not factory work. You can't go out and say, I need to do X amount of this and X amount of that. You have to respond to the community needs.
Right.
That's the true. If people feel safe and they're very happy with the services being provided, it doesn't matter if you've made an arrest or written citations. And there are times you have to do that. If people come on campus and they want to harm somebody, we're going to lock them up.
Right, and that's what we have to do.
Yeah. You know what? You can't lay hands on another individual.
Right.
That's one of those bright line rules where, you know what? If this is academia and you can shout and debate and do a lot of stuff, but once you start laying hands on another individual, you've crossed the line.
Exactly. And that's what, our role here is for the safety of the community, and that's just part of our job, one of the aspects of it.
Absolutely.
It seemed like, just listening from your background, you came a long way. You worked your way up. You have a lot of experience, and I think that I speak for most of all of our officers that we're happy that you retired from the other place and joined the force over here. So I think it's a real good thing for the department.
Well, I appreciate that, Earl. And after I'd retired, I have to tell you, I was 52 years old when I retired after 28 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was good because I did get to spend a lot more time with my 12-year-old, Brendan. And, it's really cool. When I got this job, my wife and the little one moved out here with me while the other two stayed down east. So we're still, we hang around a lot.
Yeah.
But when he was in school and my wife was at work, I had my dog. It's a lab named Riley. And that dog got walked more in the 3 or 4 months after I retired than he'd been walked in the previous 3 years. You're going to think I'm joking, but at the end of the day, I'd grab the leash and go looking for him, and he was hiding. He didn't, after three, four walks a day with him, and after the first three, he just didn't want to go again.
Now, that's bad.
Yeah,
you know the dogs like to go out.
At first he liked it. Then after a while, So I knew I wanted to do something. 52 was really kind of young to just stop working. I'd always sort of lived within my means, so our bills were absolutely under control. It wasn't that I had to fiscally go out and do it. But I always believed in my mom and dad was like, you have to give back and you have to contribute.
Uh-huh.
You know, uh-huh. Eventually when you know when it's time to retire for good, when you just want to go down to Florida in the winter, which is looking pretty good right now, looking out the snowdrifts.
Definitely is, yeah.
But so I looked around, and typically when police officers retire, especially a lot of my former colleagues, you'll go on all these internet sites and look for all these jobs, security or campus police or whatever, and you're sending out dozens of applications. I didn't want to just work. I wanted to work someplace where I knew I'd be a good fit and I'd contribute and that I'd enjoy it. So I did all those searches, but I only sent out 3 applications in the 8 months that I had since I'd retired. Because I wanted to work, but I just didn't want to go. And the money, you want to get paid a reasonable wage for what you're contributing and stuff, but I was looking more for quality of life and, like I say, giving back. Right. And then I applied to the department was I had seen on the websites that you all had just gone through the same type of thing I'd gone through back in 1992 with the consolidation here. Yeah. It was called the collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I was reading about it it had started in July of 2008 and then July of 2009, and I pretty much knew, I could guess where it was just based on hours, because one of the things that the police never do is when you go through something like that, write it up so that the next time departments are looking to do that, they know the do's and don'ts.
Exactly.
Now, so I put in, I was fortunate enough to get an initial interview and then get called back. And like I said, 25 interviews in 2.5 days, which is the technique I think the CIA used to use to break enemy operatives.
Yeah.
Because by that last afternoon, you could ask me anything. I would have told you secret codes, anything.
Yeah.
Just ask me.
Let me
eat at the end of it. That was the other thing.
There
were so many interviews, and people were very nice to me, really nice. But they'd schedule interviews like at mealtimes, and you'd have 4 or 5 people asking you questions. So you're starving. There's a plate of food in front of you. Every time you go to put a fork into a piece of food and bring
it up,
they'd ask you a question, so you have to put it down. It was like, I'm saying, this got to be some sort of test, how much can he endure before he just breaks?
Yeah, you see if you can stay focused with him while you're eating. But that's a huge process, though, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But the thing I liked, even at the end of that, I was so tired, we were supposed to drive back to where we were living at the time in Arlington, outside of Boston. And my wife had come out with me to lend me some moral support, and we stayed in the area during that interview. And I looked at her when I got back to the hotel. I says, Jane, I'm too tired even to let you drive me back there. So we stayed that night and went out and had a couple of drinks and something to eat. And she says, well, what do you think? I says, I've never been so tired in my life. And she says, well, don't you want the job? I says, I want it more now than I did when I first applied because of what I'd seen over those 2.5 days and the quality of the people.
Yeah.
This is going to be one of the most welcoming environments and stimulating environments. If not in the country, in Massachusetts anyways.
Yeah.
Northampton, Amherst, even South Hadley has some really nice cultural stuff and a million little restaurants and things.
Very nice area.
Ah, the quality of life here is so good. I don't know whether people understand it until you've lived someplace else and you come here. It's so different.
Yeah.
And so sort of energizing and stimulating.
Yeah.
But when I received the offer, I got a call probably 2 weeks later after they'd gone through the finalists, and it was from Vice President Mary Jo Maydew, and I did drive a hard bargain, though. The negotiations lasted about 10 minutes, and she was a very good person, and we had a brief discussion, and I said, I'd love to take the job, and I think they expected I'd come out January 1st, and the discussion was on October 1st, and I came October 13th.
Yeah,
because I want to start and get out here and start riding with all the officers, which is what I did. And I'll tell you, I got a tremendous feedback from them. And let me tell you, people listening, you have some of the most highly trained, committed police officers working on your campus and the other two campuses. No matter where they come from, the officers usually stay on the same campus, but if we need to bring people in from other campuses to help out with large events, you have a very, very committed, dedicated group of officers.
Yeah,
and that goes for the leadership, too. I know the associate director, Ray LaBear, here.
Yeah.
Great officer. Can't say enough good things about him or you, Earl. Tremendous.
You
really got the outreach program going, which is something that the department is committed to a community policing philosophy, which means partnerships. That's the key thing. Partnerships, and part of the partnerships is identifying problems that need to be solved and jointly developing solutions and then working to resolve those issues.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and I know Ray's committed to it, and I know with the outreach efforts that you're engaged in, we are making those overtures, and this radio program's a great, great way to meet as many people as possible without me freezing in the middle of the quad and the snow piles.
Yeah.
So I get out here. I was fortunate enough to be out here early enough to see Las Vegas night over at Mount Holyoke College.
Oh, that was interesting.
It was interesting. It was very interesting. And then 2 weeks later, I was able to come over to beautiful Hampshire College and see Hampshire Halloween, which, you know, you hear all these stories about. I got to tell you, you hear all these stories, and, yeah, I really didn't know what to expect. Yeah, it was kind of like, I hope nobody gets, too seriously hurt or anything. And I'll tell you, it was a great event.
Yeah,
it was a great event. Everybody had a real good time. One of the things that happens when you have that many people, typically, I guess Hampshire Halloween has 3,000 students from the five colleges show up.
Yeah, a lot of students come in.
Yeah, I didn't take a head count that night, but there was a good crowd. But, the secret is, in my last job when I was lieutenant colonel, I used to be in charge for 4 years running the Esplanade security when they'd have between 300,000 and 500,000 people along the banks of the Charles River for the 4th of July.
Oh, boy.
And, we'd have a lot of people there. We'd have a few hundred troopers and some local officers and some National Guard people that had been mobilized just to help out with the crowd control.
And that's a lot of people.
It is, but similar to Hampshire Halloween, what I find is that in crowds like that where they're coming with a common purpose, to have a good time, to enjoy, there it's the 4th of July celebration. Here it's Halloween and kind of letting loose a little bit, but they enjoy themselves. And basically, for the most part, they kind of regulate themselves, too. I saw the tent out in front of the library, and I know tents don't have capacities, but if they did, we exceeded that capacity.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
And, the dancing that was going on, I was amazed. Nobody was getting elbows in the face or anything, but, we had a good presence there, and the officers did have to remove one or two people that came with the wrong intent as far as, just to come and have a good time and enjoy the music and each other's company. We did have to remove a couple of people. But for the most part, those types of events, they kind of self-regulate to a certain extent. You do need a police presence because there's always going to be that small, small element that comes to cause problems or get so messed up on whatever they're using that they just act out. And, if you don't get on that right away, it can ruin the whole event.
Exactly. And that's something that we don't want to ruin their event. We're there for their safety to make sure they enjoy themselves.
Yeah. College, in addition to, the education, it's also where you kind of learn a lot of the social skills.
Yeah.
And you learn how to, live in close proximity. Suffolk University at the time didn't have dorms, but I was in the Army in the late 70s, and I enjoyed it. But one of the big things was I met people from all walks of life, people from that were poor, some that were rich, all different ethnic groups, races. And it kind of it teaches you a lot about, society and how to get along with people and how to work in teamwork with people.
Right.
And
exactly.
That's kind of what I equate that with, a lot of the activities at Hampshire and other colleges I think they really do help the students to mature and learn how to work in concert. And over here, you have a really vibrant student government and a lot of subcommittees.
Yeah.
SAFECOM,
yeah.
I've gone to a couple of their meetings. That's really an active group.
Yeah.
And I know there are some others that you promised that you'd get me into to talk.
Yes, I will.
Yeah.
Yes, I will, yeah.
Yeah.
We have a lot of good groups here on campus and a lot of involvement with the community.
Yeah.
SAFECOM, a lot of involvement with them, with public safety. So we do a lot of work together. So, you know, good communication. And we plan on building on that to make it better and stronger.
Yeah. That one of the things I was, if they don't do it already, maybe working with the councils to see if we can do some sort of a survey towards middle end of spring semester, just to see how safe people feel.
Yeah.
If there's services. I know you've done some of this already, Earl.
Yeah.
We have the suggestion box, and Earl does read them, and he brings them to our attention. So if you're putting suggestions in there, whatever you're writing is being read, and we are taking it seriously.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I know pretty much the box, you know, you see it inside of the post office, and it's pretty much incident or crime reporting. If you don't have any incidents or crimes to report, like the chief said, this is a suggestion box. Just anything, any concerns or ideas, just write them on the card. I do look at them. It's a lockbox. I bring it right up to the office. And any suggestions you have, you know, we do take that into consideration. If you want to remain anonymous, you don't have to put any information on it. But if you want to make contact, you can write your information on the card, and I'll follow up with you.
Yeah, it's a great way, and we're going to try to do more of that. Earl has, you've said you'd set up a couple of times a month, maybe like every other week, I was going to come over and sit someplace where there's at least a little bit of foot traffic. Kind of a meet the chief type of thing. If listening to me on the radio.
Yeah.
And I know you can't tell what I look like, but I look a lot like Brad Pitt. So, no. No, but I do want to, because I don't want to just be a voice on the radio. I do want to start meeting the students, and this goes for faculty and staff, too. I've met quite a bit of the staff on the other campuses, and I know some of the faculty and staff here. But it's going to set something up. We don't have the firm dates yet, but it will be the same. Like if it's on Wednesday, it will be the same hours. It will be after classes, but before it gets too late at night, because I know that's when
busy,
people busy
relax.
And they're relaxing and stuff. You know, set up for an hour or so, more if people want to talk. But that's sort of the strategy I have on the three campuses that the department covers, so I don't lose touch.
Right.
I mean, I do have meetings, dean's meetings, which are really great because you get a lot of feedback there. But I'd also like to get feedback from the students and the staff people who maybe don't, make it to dean's meetings. So if they have if they have stuff they'd like to bring up, I'm not saying I can do everything that I'm asked to do, but at least we can engage in a dialogue. And you know what? It's just that face time that I need with the community here. And you know, if you have concerns, that's your time to come on over and talk with me.
Exactly. And there's going to be a lot of times that I'm going to be posting it out, so just be aware and just check the announcements. We're going to have dates set up that the chief is going to be around for meet and greets. We're also going to have outreach, reaching out to the students as far as laptop registration, where you can engrave your items, bicycle registration. We're going to have events for that. I know in the past, everyone knows to come to public safety to have these things done, but we're going to come out to the community now and just advertise it so you can come to us. We're going to be there. We're going to have officers there. They're going to be there to help you. Any questions or concerns that you may have, we are a resource to the community. The chief is going to be around, so you'll see him around quite a bit. And also, we know a lot of the students, you go to different campuses as well. You know, Mount Holyoke, and you go to Smith College. We do patrol all three of these colleges, so you will see the chief in different places. So if you don't see him here sometime, there's going to be events maybe at Mount Holyoke or Smith. If you happen to be there, you're going to see them there. So we're all over the place. You'll see some of the same officers. A lot of the officers are assigned to a specific college, but at times we do go work another campus and help out over there. So you may see another officer from your campus all the time that may be at Mount Holyoke at different times. Yeah. So and the whole thing is we're one department. We service the communities the same. We're a resource to everyone, and we encourage everyone, if you have any questions or concerns, just to seek us out. We always have officers around on patrols. You can stop us at any time you have any questions, or just call up the number, and we'll be happy to speak with you.
And one of the important things to remember is, even though we are a department that covers three different campuses, we have a facility, a station, an office, whatever you want to call it, on each of those campuses.
Right.
And while a lot of community policing is the same style of policing, each of those three campuses are unique. And believe mm-hmm. me, the associate directors that run the officers that are working on that particular campuses know what those unique things are. And like I said at the beginning of this hour, we adapt to the environment we're working in. We don't expect the environment to adapt mm-hmm. to us. So if there are unique policing needs here at Hampshire, Ray LaBear is making sure that they get addressed. And the other thing to remember, even though officers move around on occasion, every officer that's working here on Hampshire has asked to be stationed here. They put in to come here to work. So
yes, indeed.
You know, that's a compliment to the reputation of, you know, the campus and the community that's on this campus, that people would want to come here to work as police officers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A lot of the officers, even if they come here and just fill a shift and help out, usually they want to stay.
Yeah.
They really like the environment. They like the students, the staff. Mm-hmm. They really have a good rapport, and they really want to remain here. So, yeah, it's a good thing.
Well, and you know, Hampshire's it's big, but it's not so big that you get lost in the crowd, and I think that might be one of the attractions too.
Yeah.
The student body is as large as it's ever been. I think it's actually at the highest watermark now. It's over 1,600 and with the faculty and staff, but you don't get lost here. You don't get lost in the crowd.
Yeah.
I met people when I came over. Earl, you introduced me to some people the first or second week I was here.
Yep.
And they remembered me. I remember them, too. Sometimes I don't remember the names because it's been a real whirlwind for me.
Yeah.
But I remember the faces. But they remember me, and it's, you know, it's kind of unique. That doesn't happen a lot, you know.
But that means
that's how sincere they are.
Yeah.
When we've met and talked, it's what I said at the beginning of the hour, too. Over here, you know, people are passionate about what they believe in, and, you know, they might get up in your face. Now, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but they're passionate.
Right.
But, you know, they communicate. And when you talk, they listen to what you have to say. So even if they don't agree with you, at least they know where you're coming from.
Right.
And I guess of the three campuses, this one is really, you know, encourages debate and issues that might be taboo in some locations. They want to get them out there and, you know. Right. With you know, the right setting, like I said, you don't want, you know, things to deteriorate to where it's just a bunch of shouting and no communication back and forth. You know?
Right, because no one hears anything without
the
shouting.
Right, right. I mean, the whole purpose is to exchange of viewpoints, and even if you don't change your mind then, at least you understand where the other person is coming from, and you know what? That's good. Knowledge is good.
Yeah, it is. It is. Real good connection. Well, you know, and I like to say, Chief, you know, we can take a moment here, let them listen to some music. And again, you're tuning in to Public Safety Talk Radio. This is your campus radio station. This station will be airing on a biweekly basis, pretty much every other week on a Wednesday at 1 p.m. And I thank all of you for tuning in. So we're just going to take a moment, if you can sit back, and we will return.
Thank you. think about you all the time, but I don't need the same. It's lonely where you are, come back down, and I won't tell me your name. Was a long and dark December. From the rooftops I remember there was snow, white snow. Clearly I remember from the windows they were watching while we froze down below. When the future's architecture by a
I was marching to the wrong drum with the wrong scum, missing out the wrong energy, using all the wrong lies and the wrong signs with the wrong intensity. I was on the wrong page of the wrong book with the wrong rendition of the wrong look with the wrong mood. Every wrong line with the wrong two plans in the sound.
Enjoyed the music that we played for you a little bit here. We just want to go over a couple things. I spoke with you before about some of the outreach programs that we're having. And some of those programs that we're going to be having in the department, there are going to be some stuff in the dorms, pretty much social hours within the dorms where officers can come in and discuss some crime prevention measures, campus safety, personal safety, and also we can do what we call the SAFE program, which is a self-defense awareness program inside the dorm. We can do that within maybe an hour and a half, an hour, pretty much so you know how to defend yourself in case you are assaulted or attacked. Not just on campus, but anywhere. It's a really good training. It's pretty much an introduction of the RAD program that is taught here at Hampshire College over in the RCC. We also offer RAD as well, so there's a lot of resources that we have here. Also, we have the alcohol awareness program that we do inside of a residence hall or a dorm or a place that you reserve. Officers can come there, and we pretty much... It's a presentation that's given on the effects of alcohol, depending on your body weight and how much alcohol you consume. And we use the Fatal Vision goggles for this presentation. I know a lot of you have seen that on some of the events that we've used on our campus. You're pretty much familiar with the Fatal Vision goggles.
Yeah. We used to my old job, we had a golf cart, and you know, you'd have to set it up, but you put them in the golf cart with the goggles. It was good because we did that a lot before proms at high schools and stuff, yeah. Just so they'd be aware. You know, you don't want anybody getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and when you get behind the wheel of a car, it's not just you. You got to be concerned about everybody else that happens to be driving on the same road or groups of pedestrians. You know, so
exactly.
Hopefully people are gonna. And they're legally able to drink. If they're going to drink, they're going to drink responsibly and you know, be safe about stuff.
Right. And Chief, what do you think? I know we do a lot of stuff with the crime prevention, and we're going to do a lot more. But do you have any tips that you would like to pass on to the community for personal safety?
Well, I'm sure they've heard it all before, but, there's some simple things. Like if you're going into a residence hall, don't keep the door open for everybody else wanting to walk in, unless you know. If it's another member that lives there or it's a student that you personally know, that's different. But people are so, and it's great, everybody here is welcoming and friendly, but you know, when you hold that door open and somebody gets in there that's not supposed to be there, you gotta accept a little responsibility if something goes wrong or somebody loses property. You know, we live in a community setting. Everybody here, there's no single-family houses. We all live in a community-style residence halls where you have large open areas. And when you feel to, especially the people that live on the first floors in a lot of these, and this goes for all the campuses, but if you're, for whatever reason, you know, leaving your windows wide open if you live on the first floor maybe letting people come in that window when they shouldn't be. I mean, if people are watching that, they're going to take advantage of that. So you really not just keep yourself safe. If you're not that concerned about yourself, really you need to be concerned about the fellow residents of that whatever particular residence hall you live in.
Exactly.
And we're here to protect you and work with you, but the first line of defense is common sense and whatever safeguards there are. If there's doors with locks, there's probably a reason they have a lock on them, and you don't want to be shut off from the rest of the community, you know. But you know what? You have to be reasonable, and you have to kind of watch over your own self protection. And when we get calls fairly. Regularly, not frequently, but regularly, where somebody will be out walking from one residence hall or an academic building late at night back to their residence. And they'll call because they'll hear something, and we're there. I mean, the beauty of this campus is we'll have somebody there within a minute or two.
Right.
If you see something suspicious, don't be reluctant to call. The only thing that's going to happen is an officer will show up, and they'll look for if you said somebody was following you and running after you, or you know what, the worst thing that's going to happen is if you have a description, we'll stop that individual, try to get their identification, just ask them if they're aware of what went on and did they see anything going on. But at least people know that we're out there, and if the person did have some nefarious intent, They're going to move on to some other location because you know, if you call them, we're there in a minute or two.
Right.
They're going to know that the police around here take those calls seriously.
Oh, exactly. And that's very important, you know, for the students, never put themselves in harm's way to approach anyone. Just call us.
And when you call on something like that, and you're probably a little excited and nervous because you feel like you've just been threatened, be as specific as you can, because that always helps. If you can describe who the individual is, what they were wearing, and try to be as specific as possible about what the suspicious behavior was.
Right.
Because that's key to us having a positive, proactive interaction when we respond to that call. You know, if we know what the behavior was and what the individual looked like, we can go up and do a field interview, and if there's no crime committed, at least they know that if they intended to commit something, they're not going to get away with it.
Exactly. And I think for the most part, a lot of students have been calling in a little bit more, letting them know if there's suspicious activity. You know.
Yeah.
We get the phone calls now, and that's good.
I mean, the having 1,600 sets of eyes looking, and if they see something, the worst thing that's going to happen, if the person isn't doing anything wrong, is that an officer will go up and ask if they could talk with him or her and explain why, you know, they got a call and somebody thought there was something wrong or suspicious. That's the worst thing that's going to happen. But you know what? In those instances where that person did mean to do something, or if you think they're in distress and they might be thinking about hurting themselves, you just prevented that individual from harming themselves.
Exactly.
We have great work and great partnership with health services, and there's a lot of good counselors on campus that were in residence life is a great resource. I mean, there's a lot of different resources right here on campus that if somebody's having a hard time, you can plug right into them and get the help that you need.
Yeah. You know, the dean's office, and also, don't be afraid to contact us as well. What we'll do is point you in the right direction if you need assistance. We'll contact the dean's office of Res Life with you. If we have to, we'll go down there with you.
Yep.
If it makes you feel more comfortable, we are here to help you. So please, you know, don't be afraid to call us.
We want you to call us.
No,
we're
definitely
not here just to respond when something's stolen or you have a dispute with somebody. If you need help, we're here to help you. And if we can't provide the help, there's a lot of resources right here on campus, and we'll make sure you get directed to the right people or the right entity.
Exactly. We'll sit down with you, and we'll make those phone calls, and we'll be with you every step of the way, giving you the assistance. Yeah, for sure. And also, on the program, there's going to be faculty and staff members that's going to be invited to the show as well. We're looking forward to have other guests come into the show and communicate to the campus community. So I definitely want you to stay tuned for that.
Well, Earl, I see our hour is almost up. I do want to thank you for inviting me. I feel really this has benefited me, being able to get out there and kind of talk a little bit. I'm really looking forward to getting those meet the chief type days and times set up so that I can actually see people at the other end when I'm talking.
Oh, for sure. And I'll definitely make sure I send you an email of the different days, and you can get those put in place for you. I'm working on that right now, so you should get something real soon.
All right. Thanks, Earl.
And everyone, thank you for tuning in to Public Safety Talk Radio. Again, this is your campus radio show, and thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for 2 weeks from now. Enjoy.
Change, I can change, I can change, I can